Well, it's Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we hope we're going to have Bill Sardi with us in just a few minutes. We're trying to reach him, but in the meantime, let me talk to you about some of the things that I'm concerned about. I don't know how many of you have seen the award-winning film The Constant Gardener, but it's the story of a gentleman, a British diplomat who lives in Kenya, and his wife is involved in tracking down some experiments that are being carried out by a large drug company experimenting on Africans with drugs to see how they work, to make sure that they work effectively, and of course they're killing Africans, and this is all being covered up, and eventually the woman herself is killed, and then of course there's an effort to kill the diplomat. It's really a fascinating adventure story. Unfortunately, this sort of thing really goes on in the world today. It's very difficult for people to believe that this could really be happening. One of the great experiments in Africa is with AIDS. We know how to stop epidemics. Look how quickly we were able to stop the SARS epidemic that came out of Asia a year and a half or so ago. But we've never tried to stop the AIDS epidemic. And here in America, I fought the battle for a decade with an organized medicine. And during that decade, I eventually won the doctors of the state of California, at least the House of Delegates of the state of California, round to my position, saying we had to use standard public health techniques to save human lives. And after almost 10 years, I got a standing ovation from the members of the board of, of the House of Delegates of the California Medical Association, but it didn't do any good. There is an agenda not to stop the epidemic, to allow people to die. And here in America, 500,000 have died. Throughout the world, 30 million have died. Another 50 million are infected and will die. And hundreds of millions will continue dying of this disease. Because there are really people who are callous and indifferent to pretty humanity. There is a population control agenda. It is in place, and of course, they are experimenting on the American people today with many, many drugs that are frankly unsafe. But you're not going to read about it in the media, because the media is controlled, and if you doubt that, why, I'd suggest two books. One is The Truth About the Drug Companies by Dr. Marcia Angel, formerly the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, certainly one of the most prestigious of all medical journals, and she has a staff position at Harvard University. The other would be The New Media Monopoly, which is written by Professor Ben Begdaki, and goes into the fact that five mega corporations control the vast majority of the media here in the United States, and ultimately determine what we hear, what we see, and what we read, and ultimately what the American people believe. Well, fortunately, we have Bill Sardi with us, and of course, he's going to bring us up to date on some of the amazing things that are going on, and the fact that you are being experimented on, you're being robbed of your money, you're being prevented from getting things that really would benefit you, and you're being convinced that you should be buying all sorts of things that are totally unnecessary at exorbitant prices. And when you realize the statin drugs, that one class of drugs alone, brought in $18 billion last year, you'll have an idea of what we're really talking about. We're talking about people who are putting profits against ahead of health, and in many instances are frankly hurting people. We'll be right back here with Bill Sardi. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and with us on the line is Bill Sardi, who's a health journalist and certainly one of our supporters and one of our favorite guests. Bill, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. We're writing about, well, the government, scientific, pharmaceutical, news media cabal against dietary supplements. It'll be on my website tomorrow or Wednesday. And we're trying to point out to the American people that, well, as Trudy Lieberman said in her article in the Columbia Journalism Review, everyone is in cahoots. And she then goes on to explain how, well, the pharmaceutical industry has bought off the news media, bought off Washington, and certainly is in league with all the scientific researchers so that they can all do one thing. They all have a hidden agenda, and that is simply to create patentable molecules that we can then use as blockbuster billion-dollar drugs. One disease, one drug, another disease, another. If we don't have enough diseases lately, they're kind of creating some attention deficit disorder or what have you. You can get a new drug for shyness. And, of course, what is all this hiding? The very fact that dietary supplements most of the time can duplicate the biological action of most of these drugs at far less cost, reduce side effects, and certainly greater effectiveness. And, of course, this is something the public just can't fathom. You mean, yes, your diabetes drug and your blood pressure drug and your cholesterol drug, and all those can be duplicated with dietary supplements, the same biological action in many cases. And so, in fact, many of the drugs don't even address the actual cause of your health problems, particularly as you get older. And so there's no way that they could really do anything but just kind of hold everything off to a Mexican standoff of some kind. And so you have chronic disease and you have chronic need for the drug. And that's basically where the medicines stand. And so this is where we are in America, for the public not to see it. Well, it's the news media's fault, because they're really paid off too. And I've often wondered, Dr. Stan, you know, the news media gets an advance copy of the New England Journal of Medicine and all the other major medical journals. They know all the major medical reports that are coming out, some new drug and so on, ahead of time. Now, I call that insider information. You mean to tell me they don't ask their wife or their uncle or somebody to buy a bunch of stock in Merck or Pfizer or somebody, because...
Hold that stuff right there, Bill. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Bill Sarney, who's a health journalist, is certainly one of our good friends and supporters, and we're talking about really the medical, pharmaceutical complex, and of course they're in cahoots with the news media as well, and they're really not telling the American people about the danger of many of these drugs, and really actively covering up the benefits of many of the vitamins and minerals and other health supplements that are there that have exactly the same pharmaceutical effect and work through exactly the same molecular structures. But of course, they can't tell the American people that, because they don't cost hardly anything. And these other things, of course, are certainly exorbitantly expensive. And I would hate to say that there is an agenda out there to make billions of dollars off the back of the American people by jacking up prices here. Oh, you know, we have to have these high prices here so we can do our research. They actually spend far more money on advertising than they do on research. But they can't let the American people know that. And as I mentioned earlier, a wonderful book, which we do carry, by Dr. Marcia Angel, formerly the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, who has a staff appointment at Harvard, certainly an esteemed physician. The truth about the drug companies is must reading for anybody who really wants to know what's happening to your health. Well, that is a background, Bill. You pick up the story.
The only way they get away with this is the American public has to be steered away, badgered, scared, frightened, away from the dietary supplements. It's that simple. If the public was using these, they would be far healthier. They would realize it. They would have no need for these other drugs. Only individuals, one at a time, have been able to learn these lessons. And, of course, what they do is flood us with information. First, by laws, the recommended dietary allowance, they scare us away that we don't need any more than that, or there's an upper safe limit. Well, we wouldn't want to go over that. It said safe, so Any kind of toxicity is usually five times greater, but they don't tell people this. And so they think if they're up at the upper safe limit, they're up at the, well, the border of toxicity. And so they make sure they don't take too much vitamin C. And, of course, they don't want to get that dreadful diarrhea that you might get from vitamin C. And these are all the things they hit here, that they'll take too much vitamin D and get calcifications. And they might get kidney stones also from vitamin C. And all of these nasty things, which, well, for the most part, are untrue.
Well, I think one of the things is, Bill, that the doctors really don't know this, because they are victims in many instances of exactly the same propaganda that the public is. The public goes to the doctor and says, what do you think about this? The doctor talks about what he reads in his medical journal, which is very often subsidized by the drug companies. What he hears is his medical meetings, which are very often subsidized by the drug companies. What he hears from the detail men, who certainly work full-time for the drug companies. And unfortunately, many of the doctors really don't know how beneficial many of these supplements really are, and really how they could be helping their patients at a, really avoid so many of these degenerative diseases that are destroying our population if they were just giving the right advice.
Well, certainly the physicians are misled, and we call it, part of our report is the pseudoscience that they flood into the literature. The doctors read this, it sounds reasonable. And, of course, you're wasting your time. Vitamin C is just, it creates expensive urine and some of these kind of nonsense reports. And so the doctors read these things, and they don't know that, well, for many parts, the medical literature has erased some of these things. They're mistaken. They should be removed. And now we find, for instance, in vitamin C, that they really need to correct everything, as the latest research shows. That we certainly can benefit by taking high doses, and we can do it safely without any concerns. But the doctors have been trained with information in the past, and what do we do with that information? No one's retracting it, and, of course, it's getting to be quite confusing for the doctors as well. And, of course, the idea is to continue doing this. One great example that we're putting in my report on my website is where they said vitamin E increased the risk of death, so don't take high dose vitamin D. Now, what they did is they picked 19 vitamin E studies, combined all the data, and pooled it together. They call it a meta-analysis, and then they said it slightly increased the risk of death. Well, it was 1 out of 100, so that would be 1%, but the slight increase sounded like everyone was going to die. And they didn't tell you that there were many more studies on vitamin E than just 19. They selectively removed any of the studies where less than 10 people died. And they didn't tell you the two studies of the 19 where they used more than 2,000 units of vitamin E a day. Both of those showed a lower risk of mortality. Now, these are the kind of selective science that they present. The doctors never read this. And, of course, this is the kind of thing that you're going to hear in the literature. They're flooding this information.
And, of course, the thing is, a meta-analysis should include every legitimate study, but they specifically exclude the study to shape the conclusion, because they've already decided what the conclusion is going to be. It's just, how do you sell it to the suckers, I mean, to the American people?
Well,
and that's the tragedy.
It is a tragedy, and, of course, the American public's just being handled like they're some sort of, pawns or sheep. You know, this is the kind of attitude we have. And so the public doesn't really know they're being herded around, and have no idea what's going on. So for the most part, it's just doctors being misled. So now we have the blind leading the blind, the doctors leading the patients. And so certainly earlier this past year, I mean, the Journal of the American Medical Association had a report talking about vitamin E and women's health, and the headlines read, well, vitamin E doesn't help, just not effective for cardiovascular disease or cancer prevention. But they didn't tell you the study, buried way down in about paragraph 10, was that vitamin E in high doses reduced the risk of cardiovascular death. Not cardiovascular disease, but death by 24%. Well, they just buried that, let these other negative headlines stand out, that it was ineffective. Didn't mean it was dangerous, but... So vitamin E, just dismiss the idea of taking any of it. Of course, this is the kind of thing that we're kind of getting into. the news media is just passing over giant breakthroughs in the medical literature. We review some of it in my report, whether it's the fact they found that vitamin C taken intravenously can reach concentrations that can, of course, cure cancer. That was found in the Annals of Internal Medicine in April of 2004. The news media just completely overlooked it. It vindicated Linus Pauling's work, where he showed 28 years ago with Dr. Ewan Cameron that intravenous vitamin C did prolong the lives of end-stage cancer patients by quite a few months, some of them a few years. Of course, this was a great vindication. It should have been on the front page of every newspaper in April of 2004. It wasn't reported by one major news media source, and then, of course, the National Library of Medicine selectively censored many of Dr. Linus Pauling's papers that were published in the Journal of Orthomolecular Medicine by simply not listing that journal on the National Library of Medicine.
And I think that's really such an important thing. There are a number of very important journals that have very important information that are simply censored. And I know from my personal experience, because I've been very worried about water fluoridation, and because it's really the thing that I think is really poisoning the minds of our youth. That's one reason why our high school graduates, you know, when they graduate from high school in America and they test them competitively with students of other nations, they can't even begin to compete. And you know, we know, of course, fluoride will actually knock down the IQ about 10, 15 points. But the Medline and PubMed, National Library of Medicine, will not list the journal fluoride. No articles in there are ever mentioned there. So if you're going there to, as your source of information, you're not going to get it. And apparently they just delete these, what is it, this journal of orthomolecular medicine?
Right. And of course, it, you know, it, they have a bunch of innocuous journals, the Kansas Historical Society Journal on the National Library of Medicine. So it's not like, you know, they don't allow some journals in that are a little bit marginal. So this would have been a mainline journal. And of course, many of the original unique articles produced by Dr. Linus Pauling were only published in the Journal of Orthomolecular Medicine, so that the doctors can't see it, public can't see those things when they go to Medline and they start doing a search, so it causes these kind of problems. So we see this at all levels, of course, and you know, it doesn't matter what it is. Here we're pointing out there's a paper written by a Japanese journal. It's the Japanese Journal of the Pharmaceutical Society of Japan. And this doctor in the last few months has been pointing out that, well, his urgent call was for all doctors in the world to back away from cholesterol-reducing medications.
You're talking about the statin drugs now.
Right. And no evidence they reduce mortality rates, and to begin embracing the widespread use of fish oil, which reduces the incidence of cancer, heart disease, and all causes of mortality. So, of course, not one person in the news media, this is the major pharmaceutical journal in Japan, not a word about this in the news media. And this is the kind of thing you get. Trudy Lieberman, who we said wrote for the Columbia Journal of Journalism, certainly talking, they could have reported on Vioxx 4 years earlier had the news media been doing its job and, of course, saving Americans from dying of the side effects of this anti-inflammatory drug. He didn't do the job.
And, of course, as Dr. Graham pointed out in his testimony before the United States Senate, I think it was November of last, the year before last, you know, probably there were about 88,000 heart attacks and strokes in America, unnecessary because of the Vioxx. And then he quoted a gentleman from the Cleveland Clinic who estimated it was 160,000. And what are those? 30-40% died. And yet, of course, they knew what was happening. They covered it up. And you have to ask yourself, why would any humane person do that? And the answer is, humane people would not do that sort of thing. But we have people who march to a different drumbeat in America today. Well, our guest is Bill Sarnie, and of course Bill is a health journalist, and we're talking about really so much of the information that is out there, and he's done a wonderful job of putting this together, and it's in a article that'll be up on his website a day or so called "A Government Scientific Pharmaceutical News Media Grip Over Dietary Supplements." So pick up the story there, Bill.
Well, certainly at all levels of government, research institutes, certainly the news media, all involved in these payoffs, and we certainly can't go to the referees. Our elected representatives just recently pointed out that many of them hold stocks and drug companies and so on, so we can't even go appeal to them. There's no appealing here.
What about the FDA? And I think that this is really the... So many people honestly think the FDA is there to protect the American people. It is not there to protect the American people. It's there to enrich the drug companies. And this is, of course, what Dr. David Graham risked his career working. He was a career scientist for the FDA, and he finally just had it, and he went to the Senate, destroyed his... testified before the Senate about Vioxx, and it destroyed his career because they get you. They will go out to make your life miserable if you dare tell the American people the truth. And actually, we have his testimony as one of my newsletters in total. You need to get it. You need to read it. You need to understand what happens to people that are working for government who really want to protect the health of the American people. Do not trust the FDA. It is a political organization made up of career politicians with scientific degrees, many of whom are going to do very well financially. And when they quit working for the FDA, many of them will go to work for the drug companies at inflated salaries, reward for services rendered.
Well, certainly all of this is a little bit dismaying when we see all this. Along the way, they need to, demonize or certainly go after the dietary supplement industry. And certainly most people have heard about the failings of dietary supplements, and it's true. Oftentimes, too often, they're mislabeled or don't have in the bottle what it says on the label or those kind of problems. But certainly they're not an unregulated industry, as we've heard over and over again, and they have to comply with labeling laws, purity laws, many other regulations, and certainly they have the product liability. They certainly can't be making unsafe products and expect to stay in business with teams of lawyers standing ready. So in general, when we look at the dietary supplements, they're safer than aspirin, ibuprofen, chlorinated tap water, table salt, certainly all the vaccines. Why are we jumping on them? And so when we actually look at the data over a number of years, about an eight-year period in the Poison Control Centers of America, we can't find any deaths due to vitamin supplements, mineral supplements, or multivitamins, none. We do find a few herbal supplements that have caused deaths. Now remember, these aren't necessarily confirmed, they're just associated. You could have misused those herbal products, taken too much in the case of ephedra, the weight loss herb. Why, maybe many people did. It was a stimulant, caused heart problems. But nonetheless, there were some deaths associated, primarily with ephedra. The rest of the herbs, very little a safety problem. And of course, this is over an eight-year period. When we realize, just aspirin and ibuprofen alone cause 16,500 deaths a year.
Hold that thought there, right, Bill? We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bill Sarnie, and health journalist. We're talking about the fact that, yes, certainly vitamins and minerals are not creating deaths, but the regular proprietary drugs caused an awful lot of deaths. And yet, of course, everything is done to demonize the vitamins and minerals, and of course, some of the herbal products, if misused, can get you into problems. But an awful lot of them are very, very helpful. And the number of incidents of death are minimal. How many people died from ephedra? Well, there was one boy who died, and they use that as a justification to take it off the market. And yet, I mean, he was apparently using very large amounts of this, and he may even have had some other problems as far as his heart. We haven't looked into that. But we can tell you that they use that one death as a justification to take it off the market. Because, of course, they wanted to get proprietary things on, and the market would be far more expensive. So pick up the story there.
Well, certainly we do have some responsibility as herbal suppliers. Even if people misuse their products, you have to, of course, guard for that. And there's ways that, things could have been done there. But nonetheless, ephedra was taken off the market, and now we have weight loss drugs that cause the same side effects. They're just prescribed by doctors and cause the same number of deaths. So, it was just taking something off the market so the weight loss clinics and so on could own the marketplace instead of the health food stores. People do misuse things, so it creates problems. We do know that properly used prescription drugs in a hospital administered by a nurse and certainly prescribed by a doctor kill over 100,000 Americans a year, and yet they're saying they would like to take the dietary supplements and make them drugs, make them comply with all the drugs, the rules to get a drug approved. Yet the drug approval model is flawed. We're killing 100,000 with approved drugs. We certainly have the 16,000 people dying of aspirin and ibuprofen from gastric bleeding. That's all in 1 year.
And, of course, you have it actually, the reference to the article in the Journal of Medical Association that verifies what you've said. And this is a true figure, you know, but, of course, they're not going to stress that. Oh, go ahead and take your proprietary medicines. Just don't be sure you don't take those wicked vitamins and wicked minerals, because, of course, they might kill you.
Well, and, of course, when we hear, people are pretty savvy these days, and they've been reading books about dietary supplements, and, of course, even the savvy people don't realize, well, they've told us too much vitamin C. Don't take more than a couple thousand milligrams a day is a top amount they're talking about. Well, certainly vitamin E. Vitamin D. Don't take more than 2,000 units. And now we realize you can stand out in the sun in a sunny climate in the summer for an hour and make 10,000 units of vitamin D. How in the world could that 2,000 have been toxic? Well, they've been misleading us all along. They're trying to make analogs. What are analogs? They're rearranged natural molecules so they can get a patent, make a drug out of it. This is the main game, whether it's the National Institutes of Health, all the researchers that are funded by them, the pharmaceutical companies, your elected representatives. They're all in on this, including the news media, to make expensive drugs so that they can keep this pharmaceutical industry going, and I've got to think a lot of people behind the scenes certainly own drug stocks, and that's what's driving this whole
and
thing.
I would simply mention that recently they passed a law in Washington, D.C., they're trying to get this through, that if the drug has been authorized by the FDA, it doesn't matter that it kills you, it doesn't matter what terrible complications you get from it, as long as the FDA has said it's all right, that gives the drug companies a free pass, a get-out-of-jail-free card. You cannot be sued. And so then, of course, they want, of course, to have the federal laws supersede the state laws so that you will have no comeback on drug companies that are putting out products that could very well kill you. Why would you pass something like that? Because you're worried about the people? Or because you're worried about the profits of the drug companies? This is one of the latest atrocities. Where is the outcry from the media? It's sort of deafening in its silence.
Well, it certainly is. People must wonder, well, how in the world can the dietary supplements be so safe, and yet they haven't undergone all these tests? And the reason is you're using natural molecules that, you know, the body accepts. When you use these re-engineered things, they have a little molecular tail. Body recognize them, sooner or later you have a side effect. So that's the kind of problem that you're having, and of course the body recognizes it, and that's why we have so many side effects.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back in here in just a few minutes with Bill Sadi, and I think it's so important that, ladies and gentlemen, that you realize we have a real problem with health here in the United States. And if you have not yet read the book, The Truth About the Drug Companies by Dr. Marcia Angel, or, of course, we carry a book on the statin drugs by Shane Ellison, and we have books on magnesium. Actually, magnesium is something that we all need, or many, many people need, and, of course, it has to do with muscle function and cardiac function, but the average individual has no knowledge of that. And, of course, when we get back, we're going to tell you how to get hold of Bill Sadi's website. You're going to find fascinating information there you need to protect yourself and your family. Well, Bill, you go ahead and pick the story up there.
Well, it's never ending, and as we see here, we were talking about analogs a moment ago, and of course, those are the rearranged molecules that the drug companies want to get a patent on. And it was in 1996 that Dr. Larry Clark, then working at Cornell University, found that a little natural trace mineral, selenium, dramatically reduced the risk for most cancers. All it took was 200 micrograms, one-fifth of 1 milligram. He used a special kind of selenium called Seleno XL, available in health food stores, and it was one of those double-blind, interventional, placebo-controlled studies that modern medicine keeps demanding of the dietary supplement industry. Well, that's exactly how all this got proved. How did the industry handle it? Of course, they just said it was too good to be true, that they need another study to prove this all, because they didn't believe it, even though they demand this kind of study. And what do oncologists keep studying today? Not selenium, but a little drug called Ebsilin, which is a synthetically produced selenium drug, or an analog, as they call it, in order to treat cancer. In other words, it's okay to treat it, and we can use it as long as it's selenium, but it's got to be synthetically produced, and we've got to have it go through a drug company and make a lot more money than just a dietary supplement. And this is exactly the kind of ruse that's pulled over on the public. And the same thing's going on with vitamin D. We've seen these large announcements now that vitamin D could drastically reduce the risk of cancer, dropping the rates of cancer, major forms of cancer, by 30 to 50%. Will the public pick up on this, start taking higher doses of vitamin D, at least 2,000 units a day? If they do, we will drop the cancer rate dramatically. And, of course, what are they going to do? This happened back in the early 1990s when Dr. Linus Pauling wrote his book, The Common Cold and Vitamin C. And, of course, the use of vitamin C went up 300%, and the death rate went down in the United States dramatically, the mortality rate to cardiovascular disease. The Linus Pauling Institute website cites all this. Of course, the National Institutes of Health hid all this information from us. They didn't want to let the public know that the mortality rate for cardiovascular disease was dropping due to Americans taking more vitamin C. The same thing might occur if we catch on with vitamin D. We need to get a couple of thousand units, but we're so frightened about this, quote, high dose. And we'll check the Merck manual and the physician's desk reference. We'll call our doctor, dietitian.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Bill Soddy. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Bill Soddy. And I know Bill is talking about, you know, the beneficial effects of large doses of vitamin D, and he's not talking about phenomenal doses. He's talking maybe of 4,000 units. I remember when I was practicing medicine, I used to give 50,000 units twice a week. And this, of course, if you take 50,000 units every day for several years, why, you might get vitamin D intoxication. But certainly you could use 50,000 units twice a week with impunity. And, of course, basically you're talking, what, about 4,000 units a day, Bill?
4,000 units, but so everyone understands, it's one-tenth of 1 milligram by weight. So it's hardly anything, and certainly we would make a lot more if we were out in the sun. Now, if we don't want to get sunburned or we don't want those kind of problems, well, aging of the skin, why we get sunlight in a bottle, which is vitamin D. And so certainly in the winter months, certainly at times when we can't get outdoors, we're not going to make enough vitamin D, and it's related to cancer. It's related to autoimmune disease. It's related to hypertension, obesity, mental depression, and the list goes on and on.
So, haven't some people actually suggested that one reason we get so much influenza and we get our influenza epidemics in the wintertime is because we're not getting high enough vitamin D?
That's exactly right. And, of course, we see this now where the colds are exchanged from one person to another, but the flu is not transmitted from one individual to another. They notice it comes in winter. They've never been able to prove it's transmitted from one person to another, and we think it has to do with the dropping of the immune system in the winter months. And, of course, you can read about more about this at the website, knowledgeofhealth.com, where we have a lot of this published, and we'll sometimes link you over to the Vitamin D Foundation website, where they can show you more about this. So they talk about this. These are all the leading researchers in vitamin D in the world. So
now let's get that website out again. That's Knowledge of Health.
KnowledgeofHealth.com, and certainly a lot of free information there about all these subjects, so that you can learn about them. And of course, I just can't tell you how much vitamin D needs to be universally supplemented. You cannot get it out of your diet. You only get a paltry 250 units. You're not going to get it from the sun. We don't go outdoors enough in the winter months. We don't get it. Certainly in northern climates, we don't get enough of vitamin D. So we know that it, even in Florida, people are deficient in vitamin D, and that's a sunny climate. So what we know now is that we all ought to be supplementing en masse. It's very inexpensive. And, of course, there's even some 5,000-unit vitamin D pills around now, so you can just get it all in one capsule. It'll be very inexpensive. But my website leads you to those places, helps you find it. But the issue is that you can get out of your timidity about dietary supplements. Begin supplementing vitamin C 500 milligrams three times a day or more, and certainly keeping your blood levels up. It's water-soluble. It washes out. You need to keep the blood levels up. And, of course, get the vitamin D, these kind of things. And if Americans begin doing this, we're not going to need the medications. We're going to see the mortality rates drop, and especially if we do this vitamin C, vitamin D, fish oil. Those are three big ones. We're going to see this drop, and then we're going to just get around the system. If you're going to stay healthy in America, you're going to need to get around the current medical care system. It doesn't mean your doctors are all to be avoided, and certainly our orthopedists and our dentists and our ophthalmologists are critically important to us, because when they analyzed the most effective forms of medicine, they realized that doctors that fix bones and teeth and repair cataracts, those could all be proven. They all have evidence that they work. The rest of medicine has a hard time justifying that there's any evidence or behind most of the treatments that are offered. But those three are certainly very good. Now, we used to rely on our pediatricians and taking our children in. Now all they're doing is peddling unsafe vaccines. So I have to say, on my website, we gave out awards for last year. And, of course, I'm sorry to say the American Academy of Pediatrics won our Enema Bag Award for just carte blanche adopting all these unsafe vaccines. And, of course, woe to the pediatricians who accepted their profession's call to just deliver these unsafe vaccines to children like this with no other explanation for this outbreak of autism. They just look the other way and act like, we don't know what's causing it, but it isn't the vaccines. And so, this kind of irresponsibility is terrible. You're really going to have to be in a tough situation and learn how to judiciously deal with these doctors, and some of them are refusing now to take care of young children unless the children are vaccinated. So we're really being put in a tight position.
And let me simply point out that if you go to a doctor and says, I won't treat you if you don't take the vaccines, that you look for another doctor. And all you need to do is ask them why there are no Amish children or Mennonite children, but specifically the Amish children. There have been a number of studies and investigations of that. Amish children don't get autism. They don't get so many of the autoimmune diseases that you see in the children who are being vaccinated. And the government says, well, we couldn't run a study here in this country to do a double-blind study. Some children get vaccines, or some children don't get vaccines. You know, that would be immoral. Or some children get the vaccines with the mercury and some children get vaccines without the mercury. These studies have been done. They have the statistics. And, of course, they've done everything to suppress that information. Dr. Mark and David Geyer, we've interviewed them many times, have been to the CDC database. They know the truth. They've been suppressing this information. But the information on the Amish children should be so obvious to anybody. These children do not get autism. They do not get many of the diseases that the children who take the vaccines do, and the government knows that. But you have to understand there is a different agenda. There's a different mindset among some people, and people say, well, nobody would want to hurt children. And I would say, what do you mean nobody wants to hurt children? There have been demonstrations the last couple of days for those people who want to destroy children within the womb. They want to kill unborn children. The partial birth abortion issue. There really are people who have a different worldview, and until you can recognize that, it's so difficult to understand any of the things we're talking about, because the logical person would say nobody would want to suggest something that was harmful to people, would they? And the answer is yes. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, this never ends. I mean, this goes on and on and on, and I know for many of you, you want to know, well, if I'm taking this medicine, what could substitute for it? And for many of you, you don't even realize that your diet, your medicines that you're taking are depleting you of certain nutrients, which is, well, why you need to keep taking them, because you're going to never get well. And so most of the cardiac drugs for hypertension, cholesterol, et cetera, deplete you of coenzyme Q10. Now, this is a nutrient your body makes. It's an antioxidant. And it's important for cell energy, so we see that you're never going to get well there. Even an innocent aspirin tablet will deplete you of vitamin C and folic acid. Now, this is very important that you get those two nutrients in, and I know I can hear you saying, well, I just take this little baby aspirin. It still does it. And by the way, your coated baby aspirin is still very good at digging a hole in your gastric tract, causing bleeding, ulcers. And for many of you, you have a little tortuous esophagus, so when you swallow acidic pills like aspirin, they get caught on a little ledge in your esophagus, and then they just sit there and burn the esophagus, and you don't have nerve endings in there, so you don't even realize you're creating damage to the esophagus there. And, of course, aspirin tablets, once they're in your stomach, sometimes the acid, acetylsalicylic acid, then gets to in an aerosol form like a spray can, and the air and gas in your stomach push it back up out into the esophagus and into the lung tree, and then, of course, you've got acidic material in your lung, and you end up with adult onset asthma, which is irreversible because it causes fibrosis or scarring in the lung. So this is the kind of problem that goes on, and, of course, you're just innocently thinking aspirin is safe because it's down at the drugstore. You don't have to need a prescription. As everyone thought ibuprofen was safe and so on, acetaminophen, which is your Tylenol, causing many thousands of cases of emergency room visits due to liver problems and causing the greatest cause of liver transplants in the United States. And yet, they warned you on the label, and they think that, therefore, it's all put on the blame of the user, and people don't realize they're using Tylenol. And by the way, what do we do with our babies when they get a fever? Why, we give them a liver toxin, Tylenol. So, you know, we're told that's safer to use. Well, I don't know. We suggest some alternatives some evening for some of you that are taking care of young children. But this is the kind of problem that we get into. And, of course, we've been told these things are safe. They're not. And, of course, like we're saying, over 100,000 Americans die from the properly used prescription drugs. 16,000 die every year just from aspirin and ibuprofen. And this goes on and on and on. And yet it's the dietary supplements that are frequently, you're told, are unsafe. They remark that the dietary supplement industry is unregulated. In fact, the Food and Drug Administration, drug its feet, took 9 years to write the good manufacturing practices for the dietary supplement industry, and yet all the time the FDA was saying that the dietary supplement industry is not properly regulated. They were waiting for the regulations for 9 years. All the FDA had to do was write them.
And I really think there's so many various aspects to this. If you are on a statin drug, you should be taking CoQ10, because, of course, CoQ10 is instrumental as far as muscle contractility, but it's also important as far as heart contractility, and you can get congestive heart failure, you know, because, of course, you're on your statin drugs and it's knocking down your CoQ10, but if your doctor is not aware of that, he's going to treat your congestive heart failure with other drugs, probably digitalis or something else, to try to get the heart working, where all you need is CoQ10. And another thing that we're pointing out, Bill, was that diuretics deplete not only the electrolytes within the system, they deplete the vitamin B1. Would you like to cover that? I thought that's such an important thing because, of course, B1, if you have a shortage of that, you get beriberi. And what's one of the complications of beriberi? Why, you get a heart disease and heart failure.
Well, considered the safest and most effective blood pressure drug is a diuretic. It takes water out of your system. The heart doesn't have to pump as much fluid, and therefore it tries to control your blood pressure. Now, this is an artificial way of controlling blood pressure. It should be used as an emergency maneuver. It shouldn't be used as chronic way of doing things because you're washing fluids out. Certainly, we have to replace electrolyte minerals that are needed for the heart to fire, and those are usually, we say, potassium. We overlook magnesium. That's important, too. And then, of course, they've completely overlooked that the diuretics, the water pills, are washing out thiamine, vitamin B1. Now, as soon as you're deficient in vitamin B1, they just found this in 30% of the hospitalized patients for heart failure, your heart goes into failure. You also have some mental problems. You have other issues. And so 30% of the patients, now, basically, they should take every patient being admitted for heart failure in the United States. Dramatic upsurge of heart failure in the United States, 5 million Americans. And it's unexplainable. Well, we see it now. They're giving a drug that basically 50% of the patients have to be readmitted after they're treated in the hospital for heart failure because they gave you the diuretics, which cause more problems. And they're not giving you, standardly, as you enter the hospital, they should be giving you a vitamin B1 supplement so that you're not depleted from the diuretics. Now, again, we're just playing seesaw here to give you the diuretics and then give you the thing that fixes it. That's no cure either. We really need to get away from diuretics and find other ways to control heart failure, hypertension, and other things without these medicines that just cause a problem that needs to be corrected. And, of course, we're still not getting at the causes of the heart failure. So this is irresponsible on the part of medicine, but they like to do things in an artificial way. When we looked at what the they're actually calling the dietary supplement industry to do, it's a standard of perfection, that is, absolute safety. Now, there's nothing that's absolutely safe. Why, even water, if you give too much of it, the Chinese had a little Chinese water torture thing they used to do. Too much of anything can be trouble, table salt, anything. And so if there's one side effect from a dietary supplement, they plastered all over the news media, but it's okay for 16,000 people to die of aspirin and ibuprofen every year. We won't make a headline out of it. And this very thing happened because a couple of years ago, the FDA put out a bulletin that kava-kava, now this is a little anti-anxiety herb that became popularized in the South Pacific area, and of course the story was it might cause liver problems. 19 cases suspected in Europe. The United States put out the FDA a bulletin, scared away every American from taking this herb, demolished the sales of it, and when they got back and did a review of the 19 cases, it got down to only one single bona fide probable causal relationship between kava-kava and someone's liver problems. One case set off a worldwide alert, and yet we can kill thousands with these drugs. They don't even yawn about it. So this is the exact thing we're trying to point out. And, of course, you hear about these horror stories, and, of course, you have no idea about the relative safety of these, and, of course, dietary supplements are relatively safe, as I say, safer than your tap water, safer than aspirin tablets, and so on. Just so you know how I'm comparing these things, table salt is certainly going to raise your blood pressure, so it's not as safe as dietary supplements. Tap water is fairly safe, but has chlorine in it. You use it every day of your life. Tends to increase the risk of bladder and kidney cancer where the chlorine pools before it leaves your body. So that's why I bring these things up and for everybody to see that things we use every day, dietary supplements, are even far safer than they are. And so, but we never hear this side of the story. And, of course, we're a little cautious about dietary supplements. And it's frequent on my telephone that people call up taking 3, 4, 5 different medications without question. But as soon as a dietary supplement is suggested, they call me on the phone and ask if that's going to interfere with any of these dangerous medicines. And, of course, I can't blame the patients or the people that call because they're in a really a state of misinformation. They just have no idea. But it's really the drugs they should be asking about the dietary supplements are usually providing you an essential mineral or vitamin that's needed for life. And it's the drugs that are interfering with those. So we've been all twisted around. The pharmacy industry wants to regulate the dietary supplements because it's interfering with their drugs. Can you imagine this?
And I think that, unfortunately, when you have people who have really lost their moral anchor, when, of course, they're no longer right or wrong, it's not a matter of principle, it's a matter of profit, we're in real trouble. And I hate to sound like somebody who's just playing an old broken record over and over again. But when a nation loses its moral foundation, when it turns against God, when there are not people in positions of power who fear God, they fear more the stockholders, and they want to come up with a good profit margin. You've got people who do immoral things. We're going to be back in just a minute to wrap up our program here tonight with Bill Sardi. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I'll never forget a few years ago when there was a study that came out on St. John's wort, and certainly St. John's wort has been used for many years for depression. It's a herbal supplement of some sort, and but one of the big drug companies that was marketing a drug for depression did a special study on St. John's wort, and so, of course, it came up with the conclusion this was terrible for you, you didn't want to take this, if it really wasn't effective, or if it was effective, it created all sorts of complications. Why would a pharmaceutical company that was marketing a competing substance, a competing drug, competing with this St. John's wort that's been used for years, why would they have a study of St. John's wort other than they wanted to get rid of the competition? We're in real trouble in America today because we see the use of scientific studies not to try to find truth, but of course to distort the truth to build up pharmaceutical markets. Bill, you've got 2 minutes to wrap up the program.
Naive Americans have no idea of the pervasive effects of the pharmaceutical companies and certainly buying off our researchers who have bought into the idea of creating patentable molecules to cash in on prescription drugs, buying off our politicians, and certainly buying off the news media. Take a look when you're watching the evening news on television and seeing all those pharmaceutical ads now. They don't dare tamper with, I think it's over $1 billion now being spent on TV advertising for medicines. And they don't dare tamper with their number one financial source. So do you think the news media, CNN, Fox News, CBS, ABC, do you think they're going to give a fair shake to the dietary supplement industry when their bread and butter comes from prescription drugs? They're direct competitors with each other. Like I say, the biological action of most prescription drugs can be duplicated with dietary supplements. And, of course, this is the hidden secret that's kept it from the American public. We just have no idea about this. It's so pervasive that we just can't imagine. If I say conspiracy theory, well, we'll dismiss the whole idea. All I can say, there's a concerted effort. It's all, someone once said long ago, it's the love of money that would destroy humankind, not money itself.
And the love of money is the root of all evil. Bill, we're out of time.
Root of all evil.
Bill, we're out of time. God bless you. Thanks so much for coming on, Bill. It came on short order when our regularly scheduled guests couldn't make it. So thanks so much for being with us here this evening.
Good night now, Dr.
Good night. And again, it's at knowledgeofhealth.com, www.knowledgeofhealth.com. Good night. God bless.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we really have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're really dependent on those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out 5 hours every day on radio and 5 hours every day on the Internet, various sites. We're on 4 different networks, AmericanNewsNet.com, GCNLive.com, RadioLiberty.com, RBNLive.com. Then we're on shortwave, 4 hours a day. We're on satellite, 9 hours a day. We're actually 4 different satellites. And if you want more information, you can go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. But if you'd like to help us, why you may want to consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. If you'd like more information, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We mentioned a couple of books. Certainly, The Truth About the Drug Companies by Dr. Marshall Angel. New Media Monopoly by Professor Ben Bagdakian. That's Professor Ben Bagdakian, The New Media Monopoly. And we have certainly four tape sets on statin drugs and books on statin drugs. We have a book on magnesium. We have four tape sets on life-saving secrets. We have all sorts of information on health that you need to get to understand what is really going on and really what's happening to your life. And you need to get the information available through Radio Liberty. So go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And the health information is there. And I'm 77. I'm really in pretty good shape. I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and go to 11 o'clock every night. And certainly I don't do the exercise. I'm a little overweight. But at least my mind is functioning. And I found that using dietary supplements and the various items we talk about, the vitamin D, vitamin C, coenzyme Q10, the various things we talk about, we actually use ourselves, the Alamax that we take to avoid the colds, and we don't get colds like other people do. So you have to begin to understand that you can be far healthier, but if you do what everybody else is doing, they're spending a fortune on drugs today. Well, you're probably doing a lot more harm than good. I don't take anything other than dietary supplements. I avoid the medicines that my doctors want to give me like the plague because I have read the various inserts. If you'd like to know about the statin drugs, we have a page out of the Physician's Desk reference on Crestor, which, of course, you've seen the advertisements on television, a fellow coming down the spiral blue staircase, each stair with a lower cholesterol number on it. If you would like to see the page of the Crestor entry and the Physician's Desk reference, we'll point out what they say. This has no effect on cardiac morbidity or cardiac mortality. Now, morbidity means disease, cardiac disease, mortality means death from cardiac. Well, if it doesn't do any good, why are you taking it? Well, I don't want to tell you why you're taking it, because the stock is doing great. And if you look at me, the 1 or 2% of the people who've had previous heart attacks may very well benefit from these, and the other 96%, 97%, 98% are not getting any benefit at all. You need to understand the greatest scam in the world is going on today, and they're playing games with your health. Yeah, so please, of course, remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us this evening Jerry Smith. And Jerry's certainly a personal friend of mine. We've had him on many times. And we go to various conferences together. Jerry's a fascinating individual. He's written a number of books, but he's also written a great deal about a harp and about certainly weather modification. Now, it's very difficult for people to believe that there are actually people who would change the weather. But we have, of course, you can read a book. It's written by Zygmunt Brzezinski, certainly one of the master architects of everything going on in the world today. The man who written a book called Between Two Ages back in 1970, and it so impressed David Rockefeller that Zygmunt Brzezinski was hired to form the Trilateral Commission, which is sort of the supranational organization of the men who run the world, the power elite, the captains of the kings. But in the book, Between Two Ages, Zygmunt Brzezinski, at the bottom of one of the pages, talks about some fellow who has written that by the year 2018, now remember he's writing in 1970, but by the year 2018 we'll be able to create storms and droughts and new diseases to disable the enemy, chronic diseases to disable them, but very few people need to know. But very few people need to know. So certainly by now, they have the ability to create storms and droughts, but they don't want the people to know what they're doing. And we've seen all sorts of strange weather modifications here. We've seen, of course, hurricanes this last year. We find excessive droughts. We find parts of our country. It's almost looking like the Dust Bowl of the 1930s. Could anybody actually create this sort of thing? Would they do it on purpose? You might do it to destroy the enemy, but would they do it here in the United States? Are we doing it in other countries? Well, with that as the background, let's bring our good friend Jerry Smith on. Jerry, how are you tonight?
I'm good.
Well, tell us what you know about the weather modification and the fact that it should be very obvious that they are modifying the weather, but they're keeping it secret from the American people. So what's really going on?
Well, the secrecy veil has been rent rather thoroughly over the last few years. In fact, right now in Congress is a bill that's on fast track. It's in both the House and the Senate, and the name of the bill is, and I can never remember all the
details. I think it's weather modification. I know that's
Experimental Weather Modification and Technology Transfer Act.
Right.
This is an act that's on fast track and may well be voted on in the next week or two. This bill will create a governing board for weather modification and it empowers the board to investigate anything they want and issue reports and give grants to worthy projects. And the board is very very technocratic. It's very Zygmunt Brzezinski-esque. You were quoting him, and I quote him in my book, Harp, the Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy. On page 23, I quote from Between Two Ages, and I say, he called this era the technotronic era, and he called it the technotronic era involves the gradual appearance of a more controlled society. Such a society would be dominated by an elite, unrestrained by traditional values.
Hold that thought right there, Jerry, and that's just what we have today. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and certainly our guest this evening is Jerry Smith. And the legislation that Jerry was talking about was introduced by Kay Bailey Hutchinson, who's a member of the Bilderbergers. She's one of the elite. And, of course, the whole idea of everything is we should have an elite running the world because us common folks are just too foolish, too common. Really, we have to be controlled. It's the whole idea of a return into a feudalistic system. And, ladies and gentlemen, there really are people who believe in this Platonic dream, because this is what Plato wrote about in his book, The Republic, and you go back and you read it, and everything they talked about there is coming to pass today. They want a ruling elite, and they want to return to a feudalistic system where the elite will determine what's good for the common people. And so, pick up the story there.
Well, as I was saying, the technotronic, Mr. Big called it.
Mr. Brzezinski, right.
Yes, but we also know it as, last fall I got mugged, and ever since I got mugged, I've been having problems digging up nouns. So bear with me here while I struggle to for the names of things.
Right, fine, you go ahead.
This is this bill would create a board that only has scientists on the board. There's no common Joes. It doesn't represent America. It represents the technocratic. That's the word I was looking for. Technocracy. It represents the technocratic elite, but. What this will do is further accelerate weather modification, and weather modification has been ongoing for at least 60 years. In my book, HARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, I give an overview of the history of weather modification, I track back some of the principles. Probably the first well documented and hidden was Project Cirrus, which attempted to steer a hurricane in 1949. And there was a hurricane off the coast of Georgia. It might make land, might not. They didn't know, but they decided to send out the army with a bunch of cargo planes and dumped 80 pounds of silver iodide into it.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jerry Smith has written a book on HARP, The Ultimate Weapon, and he's pointing out that they've been working on weather modification for many years, and the first experiment to try to steer a hurricane was back in 1949, when there was a hurricane approaching the coast. I assume it was the East Coast, somewhere along there, so they sent out a number of planes loaded down with silver iodide. You dump that into a hurricane, into the clouds, why it'll precipitate out the water, and at least get it to start raining, and perhaps to drain a lot of the water out of the clouds. Was that what they had in mind, Jerry?
Yeah, they were trying to steer the thing, and it did the exact opposite of what they were trying to do. The hurricane suddenly lurched and came on land, it left 1,400 people homeless and killed a half a dozen people, and the army flipped. The government went, oh my gosh, we could be sued for wrongful death and property damage, and they slapped it under secrecy ban, and it was hidden for 25 years.
And of course, this is what they always do when they've done something terrible to kill people. They classify this top secret. Oh, we couldn't let Osama bin Laden. Well, he wasn't around in 1949, but we can't let the public know what we've done. So we're going to keep it secret, we're going to hide it, and we're going to say it's classified, and then we'll put you in jail if anybody talks about it. So they actually covered this up for 25 years?
Yeah. It got declassified 25 years later. By this time, very few people really cared. There have been a number of projects. About the time it got declassified, NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, attempted hurricane steering with Project Storm Fury, which was a rather resounding failure. And NOAA claimed at that point, obviously you can't do it, but they have been trying, and the sophistication for what they've been trying has been building every year. There are a number of technologies involved, and this gets real off the deep end when you look at things like scalar weaponry and those kinds of stories.
All right, now what about HAARP? What about this idea that they have these centers where they can actually beam a million volts of electricity up into the ionosphere and heat the ionosphere and then cause certainly the change in the jet patterns, the jet winds, in the stratosphere? Does that fit in?
Well, HAARP is actually designed to inject radio frequency energy. And not millions of volts, but billions of watts. There was a story ran in, I think it was Popular Science, in 1995, in which Popular Science did a multi-page spread on HAARP, and they noticed that when HAARP was first up and running, the very first test, at the same time, there was a dogleg in the jet stream immediately over the HAARP site, and a few days later, there were what are normally very rare tornadoes in Florida, and they wondered if this was a cause and effect. And a lot of people have asked me, well, how could something in southeastern Alaska cause tornadoes in Florida? Well, it's the downstream effect. There is no such thing as local weather. Like right now, I'm in Chicago, and for the last month, I've been here and I've watched storms come over your house out there on the California coast, dump snow in the Rockies, flood the city of Reno, march over the Rockies and across the plains, and dump snow on me here. Whatever events you see going on outside your window, I get 3 days later. This is the downstream effect. What happens anywhere in the world affects everywhere in the world.
No, but of course, what they're doing is they're playing God, because they don't know what the consequences may very well be. And when they begin heating up the ionosphere there in Alaska, and I understand there are several other sites where they can actually do that throughout the world, why, of course, they could have disastrous effects on our weather, couldn't they?
Absolutely. Because we're dealing with planetary systems, we don't know what the downside is until we do the downside. And as I described with Operation Cirrus, the downside was blowing away some towns in Georgia. This is the sort of thing that if there is a downside, we don't want to learn about it the hard way.
Well, I think that the government doesn't want us to learn about it at all, because, of course, they have people there who have a different worldview, a different world vision. They think that they have the right to experiment on the common folks. Now, basically, you have your HAARP, and then, of course, that's heating the ionosphere, and then you have the ability to actually seed the clouds in a hurricane. What about some of the other things? Like, where do certainly the spraying go, the chemtrails? What part do they play in this whole weather modification program?
There are. I've been exploring this now for several years. Ever since my HAARP book came out, I've been trying to research this. If your listeners want to know what I know, go to my website, jerryesmith.com. At the top of the page, every page is the main menu. Click on books. That will take you to the book section, which will tell you about my book on HAARP. And there's some submenus. Click on ongoing research, and that will take you to a page of links to all the key sites on the Internet, all the key articles on the Internet organized by subject, including chemtrails and HAARP and weather modification and so forth. I think I have more stuff on this page that people want to know about on this subject than any other single page on the Internet. And there's a lot of angles and aspects of this. And I've forgotten your question.
Well, basically the question was, what part does chemtrails play?
Oh, chemtrails,
In the water modification.
Right.
Of course, we are told, they're really fighting global warming. Well, of course, if you put the clouds in the sky, actually, you increase in many respects the global warming.
Exactly. The Edward Teller sunscreen for the Earth is, I'm sure, complete nonsense, and that he was asked to front for Weizsback seeding 20 years after Weizsback seeding was patented, because there are a number of aerosol programs running and they needed a cover for it. And his idea of, let's stop global warming by increasing the Earth's reflectiveness, by bouncing sunlight back off the Earth before it gets in, then we'll be cooling it down. But of course, it actually acts as a greenhouse effect, and if they were doing it for that reason, it would increase temperature. If you remember, after September 11th, there was that week of no fly, and that gave scientists a chance to get a baseline on what the actual temperature in North America is without the aerosols from the jets. And they found rather conclusively that contrails do increase nighttime temperature and lower daytime temperature, and have overall affected the temperature in North America by about half a degree.
Well, now, of course, my understanding is that they're actually spraying aluminum, barium, things of that sort, which do have a reflective capacity. In other words, they tend to bounce the sun off the clouds that they've created, rather than, of course, coming down to Earth. Would that be accurate? And as we even understand, they've even used titanium up there.
Mostly barium.
Okay.
What it is there are many, many, many different projects. I've found about 80 different players in the aerosol game. And so there are, among the aerosol projects are the military projects, which are mostly about long-range surveillance. There's a technology for using satellites to survey, to see airplanes. And that, as I understand it, requires the sky to be scintillating, for the sky to be more reflective, so that the more reflective under the airplane, so that the satellite can see it better. And so this is one of the things they're doing, is simply by making the air shiny, the satellites can find the airplanes. Another thing they're doing is artificial ionospheric mirrors. These are radio bounce spots, much lower in the atmosphere at very specific areas, so they can bounce a variety of radio signals off of. That's military application. There are also civilian application. There are also academic projects. There must be at least 30 different academic projects involved in aerosols going on right now. In the global warming sciences community, aerosols play a very, very big part. And so there's a lot of people out there counting aerosols, and a lot of people out there injecting aerosols and trying to figure out flows and things. There's a lot of small projects where they will dump something into the atmosphere and see where it goes and how it goes there.
Oh, no, we've heard of people in the military who've inquired what this is all about, and they're... commanding officer would inquire and then come back and tell them this had to do with, of course, somehow protecting us from diseases, some sort of an immunization process. Have you ever heard that?
Oh,
or
yeah.
Think that's another cover.
Yeah, that's another one going on. It's all over the internet, so I assume it's bogus. This story is that they were it's an experimental form of immunization in which this way we can prevent Osama bin Laden from getting us with his anthrax by filling the air with anti-anthrax medicine.
Well, I know, for instance, that they actually have in Africa, when they wanted to sterilize the elephants so they wouldn't have so many children, they actually will spray them with contraceptive sprays, and they can actually cut down their reproduction. I really don't know what's going on. I do know that probably, as Jerry says, there are many, many things going on. They're experimenting on the American people, but You're not supposed to know. You're just supposed to be fat and dumb and happy. And, of course, you're fat because they're giving you all the aspartame and MSGs. They know it's going to produce pathological obesity. They just don't want you to know. And they're going to blame it on the Colonel. They're going to blame it on McDonald's. They're never going to tell you the truth. Well, our guest this evening is Jerry Smith. We're talking about weather modification. We're talking about chemtrails. And do you think that chemtrails are part of the weather modification program, Jerry?
Yes, and that's a qualified yes. There are a lot of different aerosol operations. Some of the aerosol operations do involve weather modification. There are a couple of different ways that the core of weather modification, at least by its commercial civilian application, is either hail suppression or cloud seeding for increased precipitation. And these do involve some sort of an object being put into the sky. And they use a wide variety of objects, and they're constantly coming up with new ones. There are folks working on nanotechnology right now. They're trying to build things that are basically a whole weather station reduced to the size of a few atoms, or the size of a very, very large molecule that can be injected into the atmosphere and then report back, so that they get all kinds of data from these very tiny data collection and transmitters. Now, the trouble is, of course, is these things are, you know, the size of a rather large grain of dust, and will end up somewhere.
All right. Now, what about, you were mentioning earlier, the scalar waves? I assume you're talking about Tesla technology, which is focused energy. Mm-hmm. And can that actually be, say, beamed into a hurricane, or can that actually be beamed into the ocean and create a hurricane?
That's much wilder stuff. It goes back well over a century. It goes back to the work of James Clerk Maxwell 150 years ago, and to the work of Whitaker 100 years ago. There are several types of experimental theoretical physics. What the physics we're taught in college is simple. One type of physics that deals with, you know, how to build a wall and how to load a truck, and if a car smacks another one, how much damage results. The strange physics out there is there's even stranger physics than quantum physics. And basically Whitaker postulated subspace, like in Star Trek, and some people believe that Whitaker's postulations in 1903, 1904 were worked on by the Soviets in the 50s and 60s, and by the 70s they had brought online basically subspace weapons, which Whitaker called it scalar. And these it's essentially the teleportation of energy, which is similar to what Tesla was working on, but something else entirely. The week that I mailed the manuscript for HARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, to my publisher, that very week, a group of scientists in Europe succeeded in teleporting a photon. The following summer, their experiment was replicated by another group of scientists in Australia.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jerry Smith. We're talking about weather modification, and we're talking about some of the work that was done by a fellow named Whitaker 150 years ago, something like that. Tesla, remember, this week is 150 years since Tesla was born. So these people have been around for a long time doing these things, and of course Jerry's talking about the really exciting things that are coming up today as far as energy and energy weapons are concerned, beyond the comprehension of the average individual. And yet there's tremendous energy that can actually be unleashed there. And this can be, of course, transmitted into storms, and it could actually even produce storms. So pick up the story there, Jerry.
Well, if you can use scalar, if you can create subspace, basically what it is you pump energy in into here, and it comes out over there, and there's no in that realm there is no space, there's no distance between A and B. It goes into A and it comes out of B. Tesla was working on that in the 1890s. He pumped electrical energy into the ground in outside of Colorado Springs and took it out of the ground 26 miles away and used it to light a bank of lights. It also caused 1,500 lightning strikes and blew out the power grid in three states. So there's some pretty wild things that can be accomplished or side effects of attempting to accomplish things. Colonel Tom Bearden has written a book, Fer de Lance, on the Russian application of scalar technology, which is basically on the mathematical papers of Whitaker from 1903-04, which is based on James Clerk Maxwell's equations from the 1860s.
All right, fine. And so basically, where does this all end up? Where are we going with this energy, and how can it be used or misused?
Well, according to Tom Bearden, there has been a covert war between the U.S. and the USSR from 1976 through to 5 months ago, that Rita had the signature of having been born using this technology.
You're talking about Hurricane Rita now.
Exactly.
The reason is, okay, go ahead.
Exactly. So Bearden believes that the Soviets have been doing nasty weather things to us since 76, and the great floods of the Midwest were concocted by the Soviets, he says. I don't know if it's true or not. It's the sort of thing that is very hard to substantiate. There is a fellow named, I have trouble with proper nouns right now. He has a website, weatherwars.com. He was a TV weatherman in Idaho and was the most accurate.
It's Scott something or other. I know.
Yeah, Scott Stevens.
Scott Stevens, okay.
Yeah, he was the most accurate TV weatherman, like in the history of TV broadcasting, because he dumped the NOAA models. He dumped the National Weather Service models and said, no, that's not what it is. The models are all wrong. All the weathermen are wrong because they're not watching for scalar weaponry. And the scalar weaponry leaves telltales. And he would pick up the telltales and then base his forecast on them and would be right. So his website, weatherwars.com, is a good place to go to get more understanding of this or Tom Bearden's website.
For our listeners out there who don't know Tom Bearden, he is a retired lieutenant colonel. He's been at this for a long time. I've known him of him for 10 or 15 years. I have his books. I haven't had a chance to read them, but he is, unfortunately, his wife is very ill, so he's not doing any interviews. We've tried a number of times to get him onto our programs, but he certainly has access to the government's records and all of these things, whether this is something that the Russians are competing with us with, or whether we are working with the Russians. Certainly he would not necessarily know about that, but there's no question at all that things are going on that we will never know about. I've seen the videos that he's put out, you know, showing the crosshatches in the sky, going into the background of the chemtrails. Certainly he was with the military. He knew what he was talking about, and now, of course, he's retired, and or whether or not it's because of his wife or whether he's been threatened, I don't know. But we can't. But he does have a website up there. And when we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about this with Jerry Smith. They have the ability to change the weather. Zygmunt Brzezinski wrote about it 35 years ago. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and for those of you who feel that this is just couldn't be true, because if it were true, why Rush Limbaugh would be telling us about it, or I would suggest that you go up on the Internet and you check out this new legislation put in by Kay Bailey Hutchinson on weather modification, and that's a new legislation that's being enacted in the halls of our legislature as we speak. They have the ability to modify the weather. They just don't want the common people to know, because as Brzezinski wrote back in 1970, it's very, very few people need to know about these things that are going on. So then, of course, Jerry has been talking about these ideas of the scalar waves, the things that the Lieutenant Colonel Tom Bearden has been writing about. So pick up the story from there, Jerry.
Well, there's another aspect of this that fits in rather, and that is the old follow the money. Who's been making money off of weather modification? And we know that the insurance industry has been hammered by bad weather. We also know that Enron made a fortune from bad weather. Enron essentially invented what are called weather derivatives. Weather derivatives is basically betting on whether or not the temperature is going to go up in summer and down in winter. And if it does go up, then you win because you sell more energy. And Enron was $1 billion into weather derivatives. And I tend to think that if you're going to do that sort of thing, you're not just going to go down to the local craps table and throw out some bills and take a roll of the dice. You're going to throw $1 billion at something. You want to know that you're going to get return on investment. And I suspect that Enron did have a working knowledge of what was going on, and may even have had a piece of the action of driving summer temperatures up and winter temperatures down, because it certainly did very well for them to do so.
Well, we certainly know they played games with the energy market here in California and raped our citizens of literally billions and billions of dollars, by simply shutting down certain access to energy, by trading energy, or frantic trading. But they managed, of course, to force our utilities to pay phenomenal sums of money for artificial shortages that they helped to create. So we're going to be back here in just a moment with Jerry Smith talking about weather modification. Of course, we're talking about how Enron profited from the people here in the state of California. Be back in a moment. All right, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jerry is certainly talking about these various things. But the fact that they have the capacity to alter the weather, and they know they have the capacity, they just don't want the American people to realize that perhaps Hurricane Rita and certainly Wilma and Hugo were all man-made. And, of course, it was really so interesting that Hurricane Rita was headed right for New Orleans, and then at the last minute, it veered off, and it went off onto the... I mean, it just changed direction all of a sudden and went off onto the Mississippi along the coastline there and just wiped out everything there. I mean, they're just whole cities that ceased to be. Of course, we emphasize and talk about what happened in New Orleans, but the hurricane they had there was only a Category 3 hurricane, and it was at least an hour to 2 hours after the storm had passed, when suddenly there were loud sounds. Many people think they were explosions, and not one, not two, but three holes in the levees several hours after the storm had passed. So a lot of unanswered questions about what happened there. So pick up the story there, Jerry.
There was the hurricane that came in after Rita. Was that Wanda?
No, well, there was Hurricane Rita, and then there was Hurricane Wilma was...
Wilma, there we go, okay.
That was the third one. Now, there's one in between Avrita and...
There were a number. Wilma was bearing straight down on Refinery Row. It was aimed at most of the oil refineries in America are in one spot, and Wilma was dead center on it. And then about 12 hours before landfall, it just gets rerouted and makes landfall at the least damaging spot. And I found that very suspicious from a number of points. I suspected that the purpose of Wilma was to demolish the refineries, because there has not been a new refinery built in 35 years. These refineries are very messy. They leave very soiled footprints that are incredibly, impossibly expensive to clean up. And so, if the hurricane had taken them out, then the owners could have gotten government relief on cleaning up the mess and government funds to build new ones, and we desperately need some new ones. And I found it very suspicious that it was primed for doing the most possible damage and then did almost nothing. And again, as you say, Rita did an about change. And I kind of feel that there were at least two sets of people steering these things. There was one set of people who created the thing and sent it into us, and there was the other set of people who, at the last minute, went, "Oh, we got to do something about this."
There was Katrina, there was of course Rita, and then there was Wilma. There were three of them.
Katrina, that's it. Katrina and then Rita.
Right, that's the way it was. And yeah. Wilma was the last one that went over and hit on the Mexican coast and then came back and went over Florida.
How quickly we forget.
Well, that's why we do the program, so we can remember these things.
Right.
I think really what is so significant is, were these, of course, steered by human beings? Do they have the capacity to do it? And I believe they do. In fact, we know that back in the 1970s, the United States signed a treaty with the Soviet Union that we would not use weather warfare, one nation against the other. Now, why would you possibly sign a treaty if you didn't have the ability to do it?
Exactly, and the treaty prohibits the hostile use of environmental modification and includes such things as triggering volcanoes, earthquakes, tsunamis, as well as hurricanes, floods, droughts, and so forth. It's a pretty big package, and you're quite right. When I learned of it, my first thought was, well, we wouldn't have this treaty if we didn't have the technology or were not very close to having the technology.
Because our friend Bob Fletcher has written extensively on that, and you can go to his website and get the information, but I suspect Jerry has a lot of this information at his website. And again, what is your website, Jerry?
JerryEsmith.com.
JerryEsmith.com. So I would go there and pull down his material, because Jerry's been doing a lot of work at this, and think of the implications. Would they really create storms? Or would they really change our weather patterns? Would they really create a dust bowl-like atmosphere in Oklahoma and in Texas today? Could anybody be that crass and indifferent to human suffering? And I would say, why couldn't they be? I mean, we have wicked and evil people in the world today. Yeah, you know, it's the most amazing thing. I got started in this whole movement back in 1962. And I have never read until recently that between 1958 and 1962, the Chinese communists starved in their own country to death between 41 and 43 million people. 41 to 43 million people starved to death in China over this four-year period. How could you suppress something like that? Why, very simply, you control the media. And this has, of course, been verified by our friend Stephen Mosier of Population Research Institute, and recorded in his book, and we can give you the pages where the Chinese had actually come up with this estimate themselves by studying the statistics at that time. So little concern about human life. It's hard to imagine that things could be like that, and yet they really are. So pick up the story there, Jerry.
Wow. that's a hard act to follow. Let me go back to Zbigniew Brzezinski. As I said at the beginning of the show, I quote him as saying that the future society that he writes about is, quote, dominated by an elite unrestrained by traditional values. In Ken Lay's case, we see traditional values are do not steal. He's unrestrained by that particular commandment. If he's perfectly willing to steal billions, what is a little collateral damage of a few people dying in their homes because they can't afford to heat them?
All right, well, somebody has just called in and said the drought in Texas we're talking about, could they have caused this, or could it have just happened by accident, or could have been prevented?
Again, the beauty of weather warfare is it looks natural. If you really want to whack your enemy and you want and you don't want them to have a clue what's going on, weather is a grand way to do it. If you can move the jet stream around or some of the other precipitators of weather, you can affect things, and it's hard to tell. What we know, absolutely know for certain about weather modification is that the United States government has involved itself in weather modification research since at least 1949. If you go digging through the budget, you'll find that in any given year, a minimum of $12 million is budgeted to research on the subject. There is a White House advisor. At the beginning of this, I mentioned Operation Cirrus, which attempted to steer a hurricane and drove it into Georgia. Immediately after that, there was a weather modification specialist appointed to the White House, and that post has been filled continuously since. They wouldn't have somebody there if there wasn't a problem with it.
And I'm sure that is absolutely right. And the implications of this, of course, are just rather frightening now. We know that they have the HAARP experimental site up there in Alaska. And, of course, we've talked about that earlier, that very shortly after this was first beamed up there and they began heating the ionosphere. And then, of course, you begin to see it change in the jet stream. And then you begin to see tornadoes down around Florida. Many of the other things, that correlation between when they've heated that thing up and when they've heated the ionosphere and other dramatic changes. What about the jet stream? Has the jet stream in this country changed dramatically in the last few years?
I believe it has, but I don't have the hard data on this at this point. I have a real hard problem with bringing HAARP into discussions about weather modification.
Okay.
In that after having lengthy talks with Dr. Eastland, who invented the thing, and Nick Begich, who is probably the world's most respected anti-HAARP spokesperson, we are all on the same page that that's not HAARP's job.
Well, now, of course, what is the purpose? Certainly the gentleman who developed this, what is his explanation for why they're doing it? Why have we invested tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars in a project unless it has some purpose?
Well, the purpose of HAARP, very simply, is to find out if the atmosphere can be weaponized. And if you can weaponize the atmosphere, there's a number of potential weapons uses you can put it to. The Eastland's main work was in creating plasmas at the top of the atmosphere that would then go out into space and become radiation barriers that would destroy incoming ICBMs and spy satellites passing through them. The HAARP is primarily designed to affect things up from it. The down from it side is a possible, but is not is not actively being pursued to the best of any legitimate research into the subject. Of what I can tell is that HARP is a ground-based Star Wars weapon system and seems to work rather well at it, but it's not a weather modification or a mind control device. Though this is a very curious, and you know, when Nick Begich wrote Angels Don't Play This HARP, he was convinced that HARP was a ground-based Star Wars weapon system. And when I wrote my book, HARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, I was very much afraid that it would be a global mind control device. Well, we have now swapped places. I'm now convinced it's a ground-based Star Wars weapon system, and he's now convinced that it's a global mind control device.
Well, could it be both?
It could be both. It's what they call dual-use technology. This technology has a lot of potential uses. But it's not. The question is not what you know. If you have a pickup truck, there's a lot of things you can do with a pickup truck. But are you actually using it to move grand pianos around?
Well, why is it so secret? In other words, why won't they let the American people know what we're investing countless hundreds of millions of dollars on?
Well, there are a number of things, one of which is international treaties. HARP used as a military device violates a number of treaties. So that's one reason they don't want to admit that it's military.
Are you suggesting that our leaders are dishonest? That our leaders, these righteous people we have, governors, are lying? And lying to the American people, and lying to the Russians, and lying to the rest of the world?
Oh, no, of course. I would never suggest anything like that. Why it's secret, it isn't really secret. It's just they're very good at not saying anything. You know, it's not hidden. They don't even have a gate on it. You can just drive in and talk to people. Of course, it has a website, but they just don't bother to keep it up. There are occasional press releases when a contract comes out. The contract comes out through the usual military press release pipeline, which goes, and then the contractors and subcontractors then flash their press releases, and their press releases go up on their websites and stay up there for a few months and then disappear. In terms of the news media, it's not a newsworthy story because there's nothing visual, it's not doing anything visible, and there's no local angle.
But you don't spend hundreds of millions of dollars not to do anything.
Well, I don't know. I can't really tell you what the budget of HARP is. Adding the numbers together, I think it's less than $200 million.
Maybe $200 million isn't very much to you, Jerry, but I'll tell you what, it's an awful lot of money to me.
Yeah, well, you know, to the Department of Defense, it is chump change. You know, the amount of American Airlines spends $1 million a day on aircraft maintenance. You know, when you're talking about the total, as best I can tell, the total price of the project is slightly over $100 million, certainly well less than $200 million. This thing by DOD standards is practically free. Another aspect of this is just 26 miles down the road is Fort Greeley. Fort Greeley is a former U.S. Army base that is now owned by the Department of Homeland Security, and it is the Department of Homeland Security's own personal missile base. You may remember that the Bush administration has always been huge on the anti-missile defense system. Shoot a bullet with a bullet, shoot down an incoming missile with one of our hopped up interceptor missiles. And every one of our hopped up interceptor missiles are at Fort Greeley, 26 miles from HARP.
And, of course, they know that they're not going to be effective. I mean, you could at the most, they could take down 10 missiles if they worked, incoming missiles, and the other side would have thousands of them. Obviously, it's a cover for something else.
Exactly. I mean, I figure it's just pure theft. War profiteering.
Well, of course, my thing is it is to confuse and deceive the American people, and maybe to confuse and deceive the both the Chinese communists and the Russians, because, of course, we have the Nautilus. It's functional. It is a space weapon with a laser. They have it operational in Israel. That's how they, of course, can be able to defeat the incoming missiles when we move toward the attack on Iran and then the counterattack on Israel. And they hope it's going to work here in the United States, but they can't tell the American people that. So we build these at a great expense, these anti-ballistic missile systems that we know are not going to work. The Russians have one that works because they have a nuclear warhead on every one of the missiles going up. We were able to build one in 1970 that worked and worked very efficiently. But shucks, we just can't figure out how to build one today. I wonder why. Hey, Jerry, hang on. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two. And we're talking about weather modification. We've got off on the other subjects, but I want you to wrap up this whole idea of weather modification, weather warfare, when we get back here at Radio Liberty. Well, Jerry, why don't you wrap up your thoughts on this? First of all, how can people get hold of your book, and can they get it off your website? Are there any other places it's available?
Well, they can certainly get autographed copies from me at jerryesmith.com. They can also get autographed copies from me currently at my publisher, and that I am here in glorious downtown Kempton, Illinois, about a two-hour drive south of Chicago's O'Hare Airport, AdventuresUnlimitedPress.com or 1-800-718-4514. That's 1-800-718-4514. I'm going to be here through May. We're having a conference in May, and I'll be one of the speakers here, so I'm going to be out here for a few more months. If they contact AUP, I'll be happy to autograph a copy of Hark, the Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy. And I also have a new book that I co-wrote with George Picard, that Secrets of the Holy Lance, The Spear of Destiny in History and Legend, and we have a website for that book, which is spearbook.com, S-P-E-A-R-B-O-O-K, and you can get either of my books, either of George's books, off that site.
All right, fine. It's a fascinating book. I've read the one on the Secrets of the Holy Lance. This is the Spear of Longinus. The question is, what is it? And, of course, was it real? Is it mythical? Does it really exist? And, of course, they say that they have this in a museum in Austria. Certainly Adolf Hitler believed it had mystical power, but that's a whole different story.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, the thread between my books is I write about control freaks. I write about people who would take over the world. In Heart, the Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, I talk about our friends, the New World Order, the Trilateral Commission, and so on, who would take over the world, who would give us a one-world government using the most advanced technologies. And then in the Secrets of the Holy Lance, I talk about control freaks who attempted to take over the world using occult technologies.
Now, of course, would you be at the conspiracy conference here and on Memorial Day weekend?
I don't think so. I think I'm going to be on the wrong side of the Mississippi for a while.
All right, fine. Well, of course, we look forward to perhaps the following year then. Although you're going to miss you, I'm going to be one of the featured speakers this year. So,
cool.
I don't know, cool or not, but anyway, for our listeners, we'll tell you more about that later.
Yeah, I spoke at Conspiracy Con a couple of years ago. I think that's where we first met in the flesh.
Yeah, I think we did. Well, hang on. I just want you to just get your web page and your telephone number out just one more time, just as we come back and all of our stations join us. But I think it's important that people have access to the information. And we'll be right back here. Well, Jerry, before I let you go, would you give your web page and your telephone number where people can get hold of your book if they'd like?
Certainly. They can get it at any major bookstore, Barnes & Noble. They can get it online at Amazon.com. They can get it directly from me at jerryesmith.com, jerryesmith.com. They can also get it from my publisher, Adventures Unlimited Press, adventuresunlimitedpress.com, or 1-800-718-4514. 1-800-718-4514.
And as
a special bonus, I'm going to be at that phone number for a little while this evening. So if somebody wants to call and chat with me, I'll pick up the phone for the next half hour or so.
All right, fine. It's getting pretty late back there, but that's HARP, the ultimate weapon. Jerry, thanks very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure having you.
Well, thank you, Stan. It's always fun being here.
Good night. Okay, fine. That was Jerry Smith, and we're talking about his book, HARP, the ultimate weapon, and we're really talking about weather modification. Could this thing really go on in the world today? And I would like to suggest it not only could, but it does. There really are evil and wicked people out there. And if you doubt that, you really need to, of course, get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, and you can pull down our newsletters going into the occult hierarchy. There really are secret societies, and certainly nobody gives a second thought to the fact there's between 2 and 3 million Masons in the United States today who have sworn an oath to the loyalty to the great architect of the universe, who is not the God of the Bible. And you must understand that there really are people who've given themselves over. Most of the Masons have no idea what they're into, but some of them do. And it's a very, very small group, and of course they openly admit that they manipulate, they lie to, and they deceive the Masons at the lower level. But be that as it may, if you have given your life to Jesus Christ, your life is never the same. And once you have sworn the oaths to the great architect of the universe and asked for the light to come into your life, it will never be the same until you renounce that oath. And of course we're told in the Holy Scriptures not to be taking oaths, and there's a very good reason for it. Because we are opening ourselves up to truly demonic possession. So please go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Get our information on the occult hierarchy. That would be the May and June newsletters of last year. If you'd like a free newsletter from Radio Liberty, you don't have access to the Internet, why, call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to understand the spiritual background between or behind what's going on in Iraq today, and ladies and gentlemen, you cannot look at what's happening in Iraq unless you understand the spiritual forces that are at work and the writings of the people on the other side. Writings long ago. We certainly quote here extensively from a book written in 1944 by Manly P. Hall, who was one of the leaders of the world occult movement, writing about what is going on today. The book, The Secret Destiny of America, but if you'd like a free copy of my latest newsletter, it's called The Wrong War. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. Seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Quite frankly, we need your help to keep up the network that we have as we reach out across America 5 hours every day. And then, of course, pray for America, pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until we're together again, may the Lord be with you.